Chapter 3 Mother and Dad from Farm to College, Kansas and Iowa, 1900 to 1934 at the turn of the century. Andrew and Mary had been married since 1892, were living on a Kansas farm, and had given birth to five children: Loaf, 1893, Myrtle, 1894, Wilbert, 1897, Marion, 1898, and Edna, 1900. Mox, 15 years younger than Andrew, had arrived in America in 1890, and made it to Davenport, Iowa, by 1900, having taken the scenic route across the Atlantic Ocean by ship and the eastern United States by land to Davenport, Iowa. Bertha Watka, the only one of the four grandparents born in the United States, had taken the much shorter route to Davenport from Denison, Iowa. The following year they were married there, and soon moved to Galva, Iowa. Dad was the sixth, youngest, and last child of Andrew and Mary, born in 1906. Mother was the second of three girls born to Mox and Bertha, Josephine Auntie Jo, born 1902. Mother, 1905. And Doris Bertha, 1910, taking the names of Mox's mother and wife. There are few stories I recall of their lives from 1905 and 1906 through their high school years. I imagine that their homes, surroundings, and tasks growing up on farms were more similar to those of Iowa's first settlers in the middle of the 19th century than our lives during the second half of the 20th. We know both Andrew and Mox were raising and marketing cattle and relying on horses to pull plows and wagons. They probably grew hay and oats for horses, and maybe corn for the cattle, using animal manure for fertilizer. Andrew may have contributed to Kansas' production of wheat. Mother and Dad's morning chores as young children might have included gathering eggs from the henhouse, or carrying food scraps out to the pigs, sloping the hogs. As they grew older and stronger, they might have walked behind a horse-drawn plow, milked the dairy cows, or walked a cornfield at harvest, throwing the ears of corn against the bankboard of the wagon. Mother told the story of wanting to go wading or swimming in the nearby Maple River, but being forbidden to do so presumably because of her parents' fear of her drowning. Once of college age, and home on holiday, she walked to the river with anticipation of the long postponed dip only to discover, once there, that she no longer wanted to swim in the Maple River. There are a couple stories involving Dad. Apparently, he showed more early enthusiasm for reading than farming. He was fond of the little books of sometimes serious, classical, radical, or even humorous content published by Emanuel Haldeman Julius through Appeal to Reason, a socialist publishing house that began in 1919 in Girard, Kansas. http://www.haldeman-julius.org. The firm sold copies of their 2,300 titles of 3-1, 2x5-inch, quarter-inch thick paper-bound books for 5 cents. There was once a collection of 100 or more of them in our attic. They were just the right size for the back pockets on his coveralls, and provided a diversion from farm work in general. When it came to plowing, however, the results were more serious, in some ways similar to those today who try to walk while looking down, texting on a smartphone. It became very difficult for him to plow straight furrows. Mother tells a story that suggests he at least learned something of the ways of a cattleman while growing up. When she went with him to visit the family farm, he fetched a horse, threw his hat on the ground, rode a couple hundred yards away from her, turned, drove the horse to a fast gallop, bareback as I recall the story, and as he flew by her reached over, picked up his hat from the ground, put it on his head, slowed the horse, and returned to where she stood. He might have some trouble speaking, she thought, but this fellow sure knows how to ride. Although baseball was invented in 1839, the first World Series did not occur until 1903. During the 1910s grand, new stadiums were built, as baseball became the country's most popular sport and the World Series its most popular event. Dad's passion, like that of many boys his age, was to become a Major League Baseball player, preferably a pitcher. When he was not reading, one of his most popular activities was throwing rocks at fence posts, something he continued when I was a boy when we were where it was safe to do so. In addition to these stories, There is a remarkable autobiography written in his early 20s, Because I Stutter, 1930. There is no reason to repeat its contents here, as the book is currently available online at http://www.iowa.edu/cyberlawwjbistbist.html. It won him not only a master's degree, but the distinctions of A. authoring one of the first books about stuttering from a stutterer's perspective, and B. becoming a commercially published writer at a very young age. Clearly, it is the most important go-to source for information about his childhood and teenage years. Following early morning chores, mother and dad would have walked to school along dirt or gravel roads, often snow-covered in the winter. Apparently, both must have had above-average intelligence and enjoyed learning in school, as they both went on to earn college degrees. Even as late as 1940, more than half of the U.S. population had completed no more than an eighth-grade education. Only 6% of males and 4% of females had completed 4 years of college. http://nces.ed.gov/lithistory.asb/attainment. It is neither necessary nor the purpose of this collection of family stories and experiences to provide a detailed history of the 20th century. However, at least a random sampling of events and dates may be useful for a variety of reasons. The news, events, inventions, and fads of their times undoubtedly helped shape mother and dad's experiences, sense of normal, aspirations, expectations, and beliefs as much as they do for all of us. Try to imagine one's reaction upon seeing for the first time a vehicle that could propel itself without the need for horses, let alone riding in one. Or hearing music and voices coming from a new wooden box in one's home. Here are some examples from About Education's 1900s timeline, http://history1900s.about.com/timelines/tp1900timeline.htm. Would you have guessed these inventions and products arrived earlier or later than the beginning of the last century? Kodak's Brownie Box Camera, 1903. Silent Movies, The Great Train Robbery, 1903. New York City Subway, 1904. Kellogg's Corn Flakes, 1906. Electric Washing Machines, 1907. The Model T Ford, 1908. 1 million from a Moving Assembly Line by 1915. Plastic, 1909. Oreo Cookies, 1912. Parachutes, 1912. Crossword Puzzles, 1913. Traffic Lights, 1914. Self-Service Grocery Stores, 1916. The Polygraph, Lie Detector, 1921. Insulin, 1922. Sliced Bread, The Greatest Thing Since, 1928. Bubble Gum, 1928. Penicillin, 1928. And Car Radios, 1929. Radio was huge in the 1920s. From the time of KTKM's broadcast in 1920 until 1930, about 60% of American homes acquired radio receivers. Events more commonly thought of as history might include the assassination of President William McKinley in 1901, the first year of his second term. This launched Teddy Roosevelt's presidency, 1901-1909, one of the most transformative of this century, with the introduction the following year of his namesake, the teddy bear, an early ancestor of the one I would have 35 years later. By 1904, Teddy Roosevelt started digging the Panama Canal, which was opened in 1914. The Wright brothers took flight at Kitty Hawk in 1903, the year before the New York City subway opened. Less than a quarter century later, Charles Lindbergh completed his solo flight across the Atlantic. Einstein's theory of relativity and Freud's theory of sexuality date from 1905. 1906 was the year of the San Francisco earthquake. Why mention that Jack Johnson was the first African-American to win the world heavyweight boxing title in 1908? Dad's nickname, Jack, undoubtedly came from the fact that he, like Mary Vassey's father, Wayne, was a boxer. Robert Peary reached the North Pole in 1909. The year before Halley's Comet nearly reached planet Earth and the Boy Scouts began. 1912 is best remembered for the Titanic, its last voyage, not the movie. Of course, perhaps the most significant event during these years was World War I, 1914-1918. America joined the effort in April of 1917. The armistice was signed in November of 1918, and the Versailles Treaty in June of 1919. Ultimately, with its deadly trench warfare and the Germans' poison gas, an estimated 10 million soldiers and millions more civilians had been killed and some 20 million wounded. Of less consequence during those years, 1915 saw the launch of both transcontinental phone service and Babe Ruth's first home run. The world's first communist country, Russia, was spawned by the revolution of 1917. 1920 was a big year. The League of Nations came together. Constitutional amendments were ratified prohibiting the manufacture, sale, or transportation of intoxicating liquors, 18th Amendment. Prohibition, and declaring that the right to vote shall not be denied on account of sex, 19th Amendment. Women's right to vote. The Reader's Digest began publication in 1922. Henry Luce's Time magazine in 1923, along with the introduction of the Charleston Dance. J. Edgar Hoover began his 48 years as director of the FBI in 1924, launching his fight against America's most notorious criminals, 5 years before Al Capone gunned down 7 men from a rival Chicago gang in the St. Valentine's Day Massacre. Hitler's Mein Kampf was published in 1925, the same year that William Jennings Bryan and Clarence Darrow squared off in a debate over evolution in the famous Scopes monkey trial, a year before the much less controversial publication of A.A. Milne's Winnie the Pooh. 1929 is not best remembered for the launch of the Motion Picture Industry's Academy Awards, but rather for the momentous stock market crash in October and the Great Depression, which followed throughout the 1930s. Most important to my family history is May 31st of that year, when my mother and dad were married in Galva, Iowa. That is also the year he finished working on his master's degree and manuscript for Because I Stutter. He writes in that book that he began his third year as an undergraduate in 1926. P. 93. Aside from that, I know little of my parents' life, times, and studies during their college years. Dad wrote for some student magazine. Mother studied dance and poetry, among other things, and told of her awe when taking canoe lessons in what was then one of the nation's largest indoor swimming pools. Nor do I know much about the 5 years that followed. Mother was teaching school, perhaps in West Branch. Dad was probably working on his PhD and other research, perhaps paid for teaching or as someone's assistant. Having spent some time in President Lyndon B. Johnson's administration, I was aware of his practice of naming people and things with names that would have the initials LBJ. His wife, Lady Bird Johnson, his daughters Linda Bird Johnson, Luchi Baines Johnson, and even his dog, Little Beagle Johnson, not to mention Johnson City, actually named for his uncle, James Polk Johnson, not the president. On my return to my hometown of Iowa City, it occurred to me that I could have a postal address that included Nicholas Johnson, Johnson Street, Johnson County, Iowa. Johnson County was named for Colonel Richard Mentor Johnson, who served in the War of 1812 and as vice president during President Van Buren's administration. No relative of mine. Thankfully, that whiff of an idea soon evaporated. It is unknown whether similar notions motivated my father when he and mother chose to live in an apartment at 216 South Johnson Street in Iowa City. However, he did marry a woman with his sister's name, Edna, who came from a town, Galva, Iowa, with the familiar name, Galva, Kansas, of a neighboring town to McPherson. So it is at least possible, though he did not choose to burden me with any of his surfeit of names, Wendell and Andrew and Leroy, besides Johnson. Of course, the biggest event in my life, aside from the Big Bang, was not my name or address. It was my birth in the then-new University of Iowa Hospital on September 23, 1934.